Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
32 yards from the center of the field. Adam Lingner ready to snap it back. It's 38 all. Bills can win it here. Wright puts it down. The kick is on the way, and it is good. And the Bills have won it.
McCoy breaking a tackle. McCoy into the end zone, and Buffalo wins it. Incredible.
This is behind Cooper, who brought it in. Pitched it back to Allen, who's going to go to the goal line and get in. No! Spectacular touchdown.
3-2-1. The Bills are in the Super Bowl for the first time in their history. It took 25 years to get there, and they did it in championship style.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
It is bedlam. It is pandemonium. It is fandemonium. It is fantastic.
Feel a little nostalgic here with this open.
Yeah.
It is likely the end of Highmark Stadium tomorrow.
Likely is. Again, never say never, but more than likely it will be. It hit me yesterday.
It stinks that I have to keep saying it like that. Mm-hmm. It's not definitive.
No, tomorrow's essentially the eulogy, though.
But it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Why?
We don't know.
I mean, you could dance around it by legitimately saying it's the regular season finale. That's a definitive.
I guess.
There will not be another regular season game played at that Highmark Stadium.
That is probably a good way to go about it. Mm-hmm. Good job, Joe. Thank you. Thank you for helping me with my quandary. This is Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly here with you. And
It started to hit yesterday. Hearing a lot of callers call in, talk about memories they had, a lot of older callers who used to go to games with their parents who may not be here anymore, right? Like all of that. Like there is a... Everyone kind of has an emotional attachment to the stadium one way or another, right? An experience, I don't know. My grandfather was a cement mason and poured the original building in 1973. Like, of course, it's been redone since. But, like, people who had families work on that building, the original, right? Like, it's the same connections you're going to get from this new building being built. But, like, you go back and look at it. It is a pretty nostalgic thing to look back on. And I don't know. I all season it's been the farewell season and whatever, but you haven't really thought about it. You've just been more worried about the on-field product.
The Bills, they've
won 11 games. They're 11-5. Have the opportunity to go 12-5. So it's definitely not like a lost season by any means. They've just been more frustrating this year than years past. So that kind of takes away from it. But now when it's like the thing, right? Which I kind of love that it's the thing. If this was a game that had stakes and they lose in the final game of Highmark, that's a sour taste to leave in the mouth. This is a Bills-Jets game that
Ask
means...
Ask Oakland fans.
Right, exactly. This is a Bills-Jets game that effectively means nothing whether you'll be the 6 or 7 seed, right? And, I mean, sure, that could mean something, whatever, but I'd rather be able to focus on the farewell, which they seem to be doing, than worry about the result and then have it stain the farewell. Because this building deserves its own farewell. You know what I'm saying? And now,
and if it was a playoff game, for example,
yes,
it's a playoff game at home and
they get knocked out in the wild card at home in the final game at Highmark. Like,
yeah,
that would not be great. Now, if they come back for an AFC championship, you've bid the building farewell already, right? If that off chance does happen in the playoffs. Like you've gotten the pageantry out of the way. So now you're worried about the game, right? And yes, yep, it will suck for that final game if they do lose that game, right? Knocking on wood that none of this actually materializes. But you're getting the pageantry out of the way. You're getting the farewell out of the way.
Now, that said, there are stakes to this game.
Sure.
They lose, we will never see another game in that building ever again.
Right.
That is it. Also, you would have lost to the Jets.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't think they will. I think they are playing,
I think their backups will play better than the Jets. But
that's also probably true. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to go out on a loss, and you definitely don't want to go on a loss where, yeah, you actually really do sign away, yeah, this is the end. And it's not even your guys that get to do it. It's not your star players. People that are flocking to the last game at Highmark Stadium, I will say I do hate the fact that they are being, I don't want to say gypped or ripped off here, but some of the experience does get watered down.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell Trubisky is probably playing a solid amount of this game, if not all of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I don't think he's playing all of it. I think Allen's gonna have a series.
I think at most he'll have a quarter.
We're looking at a preseason type of game here.
But ready? At most, I think we get a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And I feel like that does water it down a little bit. Not water it down, but like you don't get the full feel, the real vibe, the fact that they are playing more or less for seeding.
Mm-hmm. But
Some of that might actually already be determined before you even take a snap of the football.
Yeah. Because
the 1 o'clock window shows you what the AFC South looks like. Is Houston going to end up somehow up on top there if Jacksonville were to choke against Tennessee, which I doubt? Or say the Texans win. The best you can do is the 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I think it just doesn't, like, stake-wise, it means really nothing. If anything, I might be in the minority on this, I want him to go play New England. So if they lose the game, I'm not concerned. Daddy's home. Take the division back and advance in the playoffs and knock him out. Like that, I prefer the New England route.
Yes.
So if they lose this game, I'm not crying about it.
It's not that. It's about the experience. It's about the experience of the last game at Highmark Stadium, and it waters down the story that you get to tell the kids. Hey, I was at the last game at the old stadium where Ty Johnson and Mitch Trubisky beat the Jets 34-10.
I mean, they are playing the team that they first played at the inception of the stadium.
That part is cool.
So, like, they are going out how they came in.
I think it would have been cool, though, to say that it was Josh Allen and James Cook that did the job and they beat the Jets 34-10. Am I getting highly arrogant over the fact that the Jets are that bad? Yes.
Sure.
That Trubisky and Ty Johnson can do the same damage that Allen and James Cook would? Yes, I'm getting highly arrogant about that, but it has more to do with their opponent than them. That I could say, oh, the Bills' backups will be able to beat them perfectly fine. I don't know. But that's the part that really, I guess, it's sitting with me. I also don't have as much of an attachment to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
But Zach Jones and I did this back on Wednesday. On New Year's Eve, we got a good amount of calls from everybody talking about their memories at Highmark Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who else we can ask about memories of Highmark Stadium? We can ask Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Paul, I know we bring you on here for hockey stuff, but do you have any fond memories, or at least what's your favorite memory of Highmark Stadium?
That's easy. It's the first Winter Classic.
Yes,
I mean, there we go.
I actually covered that game from the glass. So to be out on the field, it's unfortunate to say we've only scored one goal, because the way the noise funneled down to the rink when they did finally score that goal, and of course a sellout crowd was just waiting to go crazy, although there were some Penguin fans there. That's why I always thought the Bills should have been in the division with the Browns and the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
it's insane now, but it would even been more insane in those two stadiums. Just the noise, the way it came down, and just the day. Unfortunately, the ice didn't cooperate real well. It was the first one, and they had a lot of things to learn. But the Penguins, Crosby, the Sabres, Miller. It comes down to Crosby and Miller in the end, and just to be down there, reporting live from the glass for RJ and Harry Neal at the time was an honor, and still, I think, the highlight of my career.
And that's another thing, Paul. You bring in an interesting wrinkle, because it's not just about the football games. It is about the hockey games that have been there. There are people that have gone to that stadium for concerts, and it's probably their coolest memory. And you're right. It's good to include things that aren't just about the football games that get played in the building, because it's the building. It's not the team's going away. The building is going away.
Yeah, the concerts used to be crazy there when I was in high school and college. I mean, I've seen the Stones 3 times there. I saw the Who 3 times there. I saw Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I saw Frampton when he just started getting popular there. U2 recently. That actually was the first time I had been in the stands in the stadium, I think, since college.
Wow.
You know, for the U2 concert. I think I went with Pat Malacaro, and I was sitting there thinking, when was the last time you sat in these stands for anything? And I had to go back to college to even when I went to a Bills game in Green Bay, a friend of mine lives in Wisconsin, who I went to college with, and it just happened to be when the Sabres finished up training camp and they had that weekend off before they started regular season preparations. It's the only Sunday in the whole football season I could have gone. And she goes, you want to go to the Packers game and the Bills? Yeah.
There we go.
So, you know, she was very excited because, you know, being a Packers fan, and Kim Pegula invited her down to be on the field for warm-up, which was a big thing for her. And just to be in, like, the cathedral of football. But the same thing, I thought to myself, when was the last time you sat in the stands for a Bills game? And it was college. It was the same game. That was the last time. So it's been so long, and I've been to a lot of concerts at the arena, but Sabres game? I actually cannot tell you the last Sabre game I sat in the stands for. It probably was college, you know, when I did it. But, yeah, just a lot of great concerts there. And, of course, the football games that, you know, I've been at most of the, you know, Bills games for the last 40 years at home. And, you know, you see the comeback, you see, I mean, just oodles and oodles of them. But just to be a little bit different, I can tell you about the concerts and the hockey game.
Hey, you know what? That's what life's all about, though, Paul. It's mm-hmm. It's the variety. It's the differences. And it's about people saying you're wrong and I hate you. But we're not going to do that because I do love the different perspective there, Paul.
And even I covered for years the high school championships there,
mm-hmm.
you know, for cable and for another radio station. So for years, unfortunately, I was on a football team that would have gone there, but I was 2 years too early.
Ah.
So I didn't get a chance to play there. But, yeah, I very much enjoyed that. Craig and Ron Wolfley both, you know, played in that stadium for those games. And I was able to broadcast one of them, the running back one. And, you know, so that was a lot of fun, too.
And that's awesome, though. Like, that's exactly what we need, though, is to also add those perspectives. Oh, hey, don't forget about these things. So thank you, Paul. I do appreciate that. Now let's get back to work, though, here. The Sabres looking to win number 11 in a row. And I got to say, even if the streak were to end here today, man, they closed out 2025 with probably their best performance of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. That was their best game of the year. But if you're going to beat the Dallas Stars in Dallas, you better show up with your best game. And they did. And now they have an opportunity this afternoon to set a team record. If they win the hockey game, it's their 11th straight, which is a team record. And I'm sorry, I will say it to somebody's face. Anybody that told me they saw on a 10-game winning streak coming, I will call a liar right to their face. I've had a couple people who are trying to embarrass me on Twitter and, you know, you should have seen this coming. Yeah. Okay. We all saw a 10-game winning streak coming after they had two. And last year they had one 4-game streak, and it was at the end of the year when it didn't matter. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I saw this coming. I said it to you and I said it to a lot of people. If they ever were going to get back into this thing, it was going to take a 10-game winning streak. It actually took 9. And I didn't think, and I said, there is nothing to show us that they are capable of doing that.
And Paul,
I said that, and I will readily admit I was wrong. But there was, at the time we were talking about it, there was nothing that would have told us that all of a sudden they're going to run off a long winning streak and get themselves back into the playoff race. And they have done that. They have proven people wrong, and good for them.
And, Paul, it's interesting on the how. Because, like you, I believed you in the fact that, like, yeah, you're right. It will take a lengthy winning streak. And the team over the past couple of years was allergic to those sorts of things. But now there's the how. Paul, it is not just that they are a solid roster. You can very clearly see it. If you're watching the game, the effort is there. And it harkens back to the first thing I think of is Jarmo Kekalainen's words at his opening press conference. You cannot let a lesser talented team outwork you. It's unacceptable. And for this win streak, it really does look like they've answered the bell when it comes to making sure that, yeah, they might be better than some teams, but we're also going to make sure we're going to outwork you too.
That's exactly how they beat the Stars, is outworking them. And the Stars didn't know what to do. Rob Ray was talking about, he talked to some people up there in the press box. There are a lot of scouts and stuff up there. And they said they had never seen all season a team come in and forecheck the Stars like the Sabres did. You know, and people, we always talk about Thompson and Tuck and Dahlin, but, you know, now we're talking about Malenstein and Dunn and Greenway and the way they get in on other. I mean, they're never in the defensive zone. Do they score? No, but they don't have to. It's not what they're there for. They're there to hem the other line in, to make things difficult around the net, to get the puck to the net, get bodies to the net, win the battles. And if you notice now, when they're on the ice, watch the defensemen. By about the middle of the second period, they're looking over their shoulder to see who's going to hit them. It happens almost every game. And that's, now you've got them, because now you're in their head. They're worried about getting hit because you have hit them and hit them and hit them and hit them. And I don't mean putting them through the boards. I mean, just you're constantly getting a piece of them. You're constantly annoying them, you know, and you know, using your size to win battles. And, you know, that's something you've heard me since Granada was around, where I would say, you know what, when this team plays the way Granada wants them to play, they usually win the hockey game, but they hardly ever do it. And then Lindy Ruff rolls around, and I'm saying the same exact thing. When they play hockey the way Lindy Ruff wants them to play, they are a pretty good hockey team. But they don't do it enough. There's no consistency in their game. And the players constantly talked about they needed to get consistency in their game. And it's like, what is wrong with these guys? Why are they not holding each other accountable to do that? Well, now you get into this. And you know what? Forget about the 10-game winning streak. We can go back to November 15th. If this turns into a good season and a playoff season, to me, the turning point is November 15th in Detroit against the Red Wings. They're down 4-1. It's the first game Dahlin is back from when he was in Sweden with his fiance for a week. And they're down 4-1. And they come back and win the hockey game. They are, including that game, in 22 games, they are 16-6. That's a .727 winning percentage. Only two teams since November 15th are better. The Colorado Avalanche at 18-1-2. You heard that correctly. 18-1-2 at 9:05. And the Minnesota Wild at 18-3-3 at 8:13. Then is the Buffalo Sabres at 16-6 at .727. Since then, they're 6th in goals for, 9th in goals against, 15th on the power play. The penalty kill hasn't been as good. I mean, in that time period, they're 16th on the penalty kill. They're still 2nd overall in the NHL, but, you know, everything of their game has improved. So it's not just these 10 games we're talking about. Really, I think we're talking about the last 22 games.
Paul, we're looking at the Team USA rosters, Derek and I, before the show, and just when they came out yesterday. Before we kind of get
Tage Thompson is on it, did you know?
Yeah, we did know. We did know. We knew that a little bit beforehand after some reports, too, so we were expecting that. But you and I talked the other day, Paul, and you mentioned, you know, the Alex Tuck situation and him getting onto, possibly getting onto Team USA, and he was not on the list. And I know there are some other notable names not on the Team USA list, but what do you make of Tuck not getting the nod? Because we were talking about his two-way play and everything like that.
Yeah, Trocheck is a joke. You know, JT Miller is a joke. And they're only there because Chris Drury is there as part of the management team. And they go, well, we can't let Fox on too, because then you get into what you had in the Four Nations, where half the Rangers are on the team and don't deserve to be there. I would have Alex Tuck and others ahead of those two guys in a heartbeat. I mean, Trocheck is on the downturn of his career. He does not deserve to be on any Olympic team, unless it's the Japanese Olympic team or something. And it's a joke. So, I mean, the thing is, honestly, if I had to choose between Tuck and Thompson, I would have taken Tuck, because he's a better two-way player. He's one of the best penalty killers in the NHL. He's one of the best guys at making players turn the puck over and then turning it into transition offense. He has scored 36 goals twice in this league. And I just think there's more to him as a player. Not that Thompson doesn't deserve to be on the team. That's not what I'm saying. But if I had to pick one of the two, I would have taken Tuck just because he's a better two-way player. Although, you know what? Against the Stars, I thought Thompson played very well on both ends of the rink. I mean, it wasn't just what we saw offensively. He broke up some plays and killed some plays in the defensive zone. He was hustling to get back. I think that might have been the best defensive game I've ever seen him play, too.
And you know what's kind of funny about, like, including the fact that, like, Trocheck was on this team? In the final, where it goes to overtime, the man plays 10 minutes. They clearly can't trust him. So why is he back? And that's the part that I really think strikes me there. Kreider also was removed from the roster. He played 6:25 in that final game. But you still have one of the players coming back that you clearly didn't trust in the last game of the Four Nations faceoff. So it is unfortunate, but, you know, it is what it is. We'll see what happens here. And the blue-collar mentality that Team USA clearly thinks they need every year. When it comes down to it.
And I thought Thompson should have made the Four Nations, which was long
right
before he scored the golden goal. You know, I think he's earned it. Take away the World Championships. I think he's earned it anyway, you know, to be part of that team. You know, multiple 40-goal years, and, you know, he's capable of taking over a hockey game when he needs to, and then he shows up. And that was important to Guerin, the guys that showed up for the World Championships. Team USA is almost embarrassed how many people don't show up for the World Championships. Canada gets a lot of their good players there. Everybody gets a lot of them. And then Sweden and those teams, they all get their good players there. They want to be there. They get there as quickly as they can get there. Nylander, when the Leafs lost, couldn't get there fast enough. You know, and then Team USA is playing with college guys and guys are going to be in the draft, and some like Patrick Kane did show up for a couple of years and was their captain. But Guerin really wants to try to change that, and he made it known that you come to the World Championships this year, you're going to be under serious consideration. Keller, I think, would fall into that category. Had a great World Championship. He's a good player, captain of the Utah Mammoth. And, you know, but he took the time to show up, was a big part of that gold medal team, and now he's on the Olympic team. And I don't disagree with that pick at all. I think he deserves to be there also. But it did help some players going to the World Championship and performing there and winning a gold medal.
All right, Paul, we got to keep you on a time schedule so you can get down to the arena for Columbus. And we'll hear from you with Brian Koziel during pregame.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
That's Paul Hamilton right there on the West Hurrah Hotline. Sabres against the Blue Jackets. 3 o'clock today. And your pregame will start right when we're done at 2 o'clock here on a Sports Talk Saturday. When we come back, well, Joe, you started it. You lit the match. Time to go off on it.
Team USA.
I think we're going to go in a little bit on Team USA here coming up next.